This conference is being recorded.
Hello and welcome everyone to our Heart Start call for this week of September 10th. My name is Sheva Kaur and I'm the CEO of a company called Fiera. Or as I described myself on camera in a very exhilarating experience I got to have this weekend, being interviewed for a film with Michael Beckwith, that I am a person that helps people shift their perceptions on the spot, anywhere, anytime, so that they can look at life through a new lens and in so doing change the way they feel about themselves and the world. And quantum physics is now revealing to us that when we see things differently, they become different. So that's going to apply specifically to the topic for tonight's Art Start call, which relates to our struggles with weight in this culture, both emotional weight as well as physical weight and our body image. Fiera is the name of our company, a word that I invented to capture a feeling that I loved to have and wanted to have more of, where you feel passionate, exuberant, vibrant, alive, in alignment with your heart, seeing things clearly, visioning things as you'd like them to be, feeling the power to bring that vision into reality, and knowing, without knowing necessarily how you know, that intuitive intelligence that guides you through life, in synchronicity that gives you energy and passion and joy and purpose. That's Fiera. Quite a mouthful. Or when our press release came out, when the company launched, we said it a little more succinctly. It's that feel-great feeling in your heart that makes your arms fly up over your head and a yes fly out of your mouth. And so at Fiera, what we do is we teach individuals like some of you who are listening to our call tonight, either live or as a downloaded recording, as well as organizations and in some cases even nations and governments, how to step by step in a scientifically proven methodology access that feel great feeling that we call Fiera anywhere, anytime, to receive the many health benefits that that brings, as well as performance enhancement, better relationships, and for organizations, increased profitability, productivity, and so on. And so we give people a scientifically proven roadmap to get to that great feeling we call Fiera and sustain it no matter what. And so tonight we're going to look at the health benefit of optimum weight and contentment with our bodies, and the lightness of being that being in the heart implies. And so we will offer up a little appetizer or hors d'oeuvre here of some of the science behind how we could reliably, step by step, feel better more often, and some of the health benefits that that can create, especially relative to our weight and our body image. And then we'll let you know how you can get more should you need it. Kind of funny to use a food analogy, an appetizer, on this night when we're talking about eating and weight and heaviness and lightness. And for those who received the invitation, I thought I might, for those who didn't receive our email invitation to this particular call, I thought I'd begin the call by actually reading the invitation that went out, because it really speaks, I think, to a collective issue in our culture, an issue that the heart has an elegant solution for. So I begin with a question. Is it possible that our collective struggle with excess weight is related to emotional weight as much as physical weight? With fanaticism of fad diets, maybe it is really the lightness of being that we are striving for as much as less weight on the scale. A lightness of being that can be found first by lightening up on ourselves emotionally. The irony is the heavy-handed judgment we inflict upon ourselves and others for our body weight adds to it, not just emotionally, but physically. High levels of the stress hormone cortisol, activated by our body image struggles, yo-yo dieting, excess exercise, and so on, actually cause us to pack weight on our hips and thighs as part of an old survival mechanism. Let's pause there for a minute. Why would that be a part of our old survival mechanism? Anybody want to take a stab at that? Why is it intelligent to pack weight on our hips and thighs when we're under stress? The reason is that the body doesn't know the difference between an emotional stress like, ugh, I look terrible in this bikini, or an actual physical threat, like a tiger chasing us or a famine. And so because the body survival system is designed to keep us alive no matter what, it receives a signal from our emotions, uh-oh, something's terribly wrong. Maybe it's a famine. Maybe it's a tiger and we'll have to run so far from the tiger that we'll need extra food stores on our body because we won't be near a food source again until we're able to walk back to our community 3 days later. So there's an intelligence behind this weight gain that stress causes. The problem, of course, is, and the negative downward spiral that many people who suffer with obesity get into, is that their weight itself is a source of stress because of cultural shame. What would it be like in the absence of cultural shame if we were able to see and perceive ourselves through the heart? In some cultures, particularly those where starvation is a problem, obesity is considered beautiful. We can end the struggle with our weight inside ourselves through the heart, and in so doing, experience both a lightness of being and maybe even lighten our load physically. And so we have some very special guests this evening to help contribute to this conversation and the power of the heart to lighten us up in more ways than one. First, I want to introduce Susan Marcellus, who works at Salinas Valley Memorial Hospital in California. And in combination with her weight loss program and HeartMath, she lost 75 pounds. And my impression is she lost a lot more emotional weight to boot. So I really welcome you and thank you for joining us tonight, Susan. It's generous and gracious of you. And then we have another surprise guest who showed up that we'll introduce here in a little bit. So, Susan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I don't know if you want to just begin by sharing a little bit about your personal story.
Sure. I think for me, I've always loved food. So I didn't have the, but I wasn't.
And love is good for you, by the way. That's what we prove with HeartMath.
I wasn't blessed with a metabolism that processed food like some people where they love food and they eat it and they're still, you know, long and lean. That wasn't the way I was built and wired. And my grandpa, when I was little, we used to say, you know, some people have to eat to live. Well, we live to eat. We'd giggle and sneak off and go get hot fudge sundaes. So, you know, for me, it feels good. It tastes good. It's a positive emotional thing that, you know, you get experience. Mm-hmm. So that's what it's always been. And I've always was, well, to some point, I was never thin and always felt heavy when growing up. The heavier one of the kids amongst my circle of friends, and but it got worse after two kids, and then I gained a little weight, and then I got pregnant and I had my son, and then I lost weight, but I never got back down. And then life goes on, and my job in public relations put me at all kinds of different places. And so then I would, you know, the weight started to go up again. And then I had baby number two, so the weight went up and then came back down. That time I was gestational diabetic, so I had more of a health risk. So that imposed me to eat more properly at that time, so that my weight gain, and I really did stay within the parameters, and I'm not a person that likes a lot of restrictions. I like freedom. But that really didn't, that helped. And I thought at that point I would, you know, maybe maintain, maybe that would really have an impact on me for the rest of my life. So anyway, as time goes on, I had the baby, and then I lost some weight, but you know, it kept creeping up, you know, a pound here and a pound there. And then there I was, pushing maximum density. And it was this kind of a secret. It's like living a lie, living a secret.
And it wasn't the movie The Secret either.
No.
We're not talking the law of positive attraction. We're talking the law of pound attraction.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like what you were talking about, society, just the whole pressure of society, especially living in California. I was born and raised Southern California, and I'm Central California, but still it's that whole California, you know, you're really supposed to be, you're supposed to have this certain look, and I was embarrassed of myself, and, you know, then I've got two kids, and I wonder about them, and it just, you know, it just snowballed. It just goes on and on. And I honestly don't mind if people ask me personal questions, because I have a feeling anybody else that struggles with a lot of weight knows what I'm talking about, because there's a lot of little secret corners of, you know, what you do, how you cope. You know, I bought more clothes. I mean, I was just shopaholic. I'd buy, because I kept thinking if I could cover it up, you know, I could dress it up, and maybe no one would notice. And but it would consume me. And then both of my parents have had open heart surgery, and here I am packing all this extra weight, going, oh no. And I wonder, and you know, I've read my physician notes and obese woman, and I'm like, oh, they use the O word on me. Because I knew what was in my heart. I knew that in my heart I was super sensitive and loving, and I would do anything to help people and do humanitarian missions, go all over the world to help others. But here I was, you know, I had this huge, you know, issue, this, you know, that we, you know, put under the carpet, like, you know, like it's not there.
You keep offering these extraordinary plays on words, like this huge issue. And so how was it, Susan, that you came to, I mean, what made the turnaround for you? You went from being this person that, you know, was living to eat and had clandestine rendezvous with food to becoming, you know, somebody who lost 75 pounds. And what was that journey for you? And we'll look at another side of this coin in a moment, where we're going to talk to somebody who did the other thing, where they starved themselves, or at least deprived themselves, and now they're kind of freeing up and letting their body find a more natural weight. But
I hear that's my next issue, to be careful not to go that way, actually.
Uh-huh, right.
And because a physician told me that now I've taken away my stress release, so what do I plan to do with it? Because I took my coping skill away with that I used food for, and so now will I become obsessed and become anorexic? I mean, and when somebody says that right to your face, you're like, oh my gosh, but secretly I've already thought, like, I wonder how thin can I be? So, you know, it's going to be a balancing act. For me, the tipping point was last September, this time last year, I formed a little group called the Runaway Wives Club. And us girls were going to Paris, And I didn't tell the other gals, but inside I was like, I was stressing so much about what am I going to wear, and they're going to all look cute, and I can't go into a French boutique and try on anything because what's going to fit? I'm 16W to 18. I'm 200 and 200 plus. I mean, I don't know, 225, 215. I don't know what number I was at that day, but I was up there. And, you know, I was worried. And so I went on the trip, and I kept telling them my battery was dead in my camera so I could use their cameras to take pictures of everybody so they wouldn't capture me on film or on digital film. And it was a lot of work, and I was working at it, and I realized, like, I'm really unhappy. I mean, more than I had ever been. And I just was trying so hard not to get my photo taken because I didn't want to. I couldn't bear to see it. I couldn't see that double chin, and my arms, my hands, everything. I started to look down. My ankles were getting big. Everything going. And by then I knew I had 50 pounds to lose, and that mountain seemed way too high. How was I going to climb 50-pound mountain? I couldn't do it. I knew it. And so some other friends of mine started losing weight. They didn't have as much. They had 35, 38 pounds. And I watched them do it. And then they kept saying, come on, come on. And I was depressed. And finally I said, okay, fine. So I did it. And that day I signed up for HeartMath. It was December 15th. And I signed up for – I had my first phone call outside the weight loss clinic. In my car, I got there early, parked my car so I could be alone in my car. And I listened to the steps we talked about for HeartMath, and that gave me the courage to walk in the door. And I signed up, and I had tears in my eyes, and he said, you know, you don't believe this is going to happen, do you? And I said, no. And he said, okay, we're going to go 1 week. And remember, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. So I said, okay. So I did it for a week, and I went back, and I lost 6 pounds. But, you know, I was at least 50, but more like, you know, 75 pounds overweight. And so it was step by step. And I parallel it to being an alcoholic. It's one temptation at a time. You know, it's looking at that licorice or justifying whatever you're going to put in your mouth. You know, am I hungry? Why am I doing this? What's this about? You know, and I have found in this journey that a lot of what it's about is emotion. And it's emotion. It's a lot of emotion, and it's a silent friend, and it's comforting, but it didn't. You know,
emotion is a silent friend.
No, the food was a silent friend. Never judged me. Didn't talk back. Was always available. You know, I didn't have good boundaries, and I was making poor choices, and I blamed everybody. I blamed especially my husband. I thought if he was more loving, and if he was, you know, would hold my hand or nurturing, if it was his fault that I couldn't stay focused or have the willpower. So there was a lot going on, and then when I started, I decided to let go of the expectation that somebody else was going to fix it. This time I decided that I didn't expect anything from anybody else. This was me. This was about me. It was my journey. I was doing it for me. I was going to prove to me I could do it. And a friend of mine kept telling me I had willpower, and I finally said to her, okay, this was like she's like my sister. I said, I'm really getting angry at you because you don't look like this if you have willpower. Why do you keep saying this to me? It makes me so mad. And she just kept saying, because I believe in you, you have willpower. So I started December 15th for a real reason and a way to test to see if I could do it. I mean, I didn't think I could. So Christmas Day was going to be my biggest challenge, was the sweets, because sugar's my real weakness. So Christmas Day, I was went to 3 different houses. Our family went to visit 3 different people. And I counted that night while I stood in front of my bathroom sink brushing my teeth. I was exposed to 14 desserts, some of my top favorite desserts.
Wow.
And I realized that night I didn't have one bite. I didn't lick the chocolate off the cake with my finger. I didn't have any. And I went, that moment was like, I did this.
Mm-hmm.
I do have willpower. That was 14 desserts that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kept calling for heart math and doing my coaching. And I was learning about the cortisol and the stress. And most of my weight is around my, well, at that point I had it everywhere. But a lot of it was my middle. A lot of my weight in the middle. So I think it's going to be a life process of remembering about stress and food and what emotions, because it's not like it's over, you know, it's a new life, it's a new process.
Well, you've really been so generous to share your journey so openly with us, Susan. I want to kind of highlight or bookmark a couple of things that I heard you say that really touched me. You moved me to tears almost in a couple of places. One, when you're standing in front of the mirror on Christmas Day and you found inside yourself that power that you knew you had will and that you could do this. That point in life is something that I've found the heart tools have helped me find again and again and again in challenge after challenge after challenge, whether it's related to my own addictive behaviors, whatever they might be, or the places in life where I just feel like I can't rise to the occasion, like this weekend when I was giving this interview, and there I was, and I had four television cameras right, like, inches away from my face so I could see my own reflection in them. And I have a phobia of cameras, and that same quality of being able to use a heart math tool, drop your attention into the heart, and find, as the guy who created HeartMath likes to say sometimes, a can opener that allows you to open a can of can-do. I really hear that you found that inside and that helped you pass that initial hurdle of total disbelief that you could do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that also from your very first heart math session, when there you are afraid to even go into your weight loss clinic. And it gives you this resource. You know, the word courage comes from the French word for heart, which is cœur.
Yeah.
So that was another bookmark for me, you know, kind of hearing how it gave you the courage to step up and try something that you didn't think even you didn't think being the operative word, you didn't think you could do.
Right.
So it opened up a whole new possibility for you.
Right.
I think that one thing that you're saying that really touches me is the fact that so many weight loss programs are just about the physical. And this gets to the heart of what we talked about today in our invitation to those of you that have joined us, that so many weight loss programs are about physically losing weight, and in that they're missing the root of where our weight problems come from,
mm-hmm.
which is they're not addressing the emotional weight behind it. And our modern emotional weight can relate to a lot of things. But one of the things that I think is just about epidemic is chronic loneliness in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Our modern technology has created isolation for us because now we travel around in metal boxes instead of in compartments together.
Mm-hmm.
And we communicate on the phone and email. We don't have community gatherings. We don't have meals together as much anymore. And so there's this kind of isolation, people working in cubicles rather than in fields together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a quality of loneliness and isolation. You mentioned feeling alienated from your husband,
mm-hmm.
and then going to food to be your non-judgmental friend, to be that place of acceptance for you, of unconditionality. And clearly, if our own hearts offer us anything, it is a place of unconditional acceptance and non-judgment and love for who we are. So that the heart can be the replacement for that coping mechanism of going to an inanimate object for unconditional love or non-judgment place to be and grow in. That was another bookmark that you intimated, and definitely tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth, but I had the sense that for the emotional portion of this, it was like, oh, well, now I'm not going to go to food. And maybe I'm pulling this from things that you've said to me in our conversations offline from this call, that it kind of, HeartMath gave you the power to find that unconditional acceptance in yourself rather than go to food for it, which I think I heard you say has allowed you this security to sustain your weight loss, where other people just keep bouncing back into their weight loss programs and pouring more resources and money and time into yo-yoing back and forth on their weight.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, I think that, I mean, my plan, because it's only been since December 15th that I started that I've lost all this weight, is that statistics say that are against me keeping the weight off. And working in a hospital, you know, physicians are saying, we'll see. We'll see if she keeps it off. Somebody in our nutrition services lost over 100 pounds, and he's put that back on again. And I don't want to forget, you know, this wasn't easy, and I don't want to forget why I put it on. It was an insulation. It didn't protect me, but it did protect me, because people are turned off by people that are overweight. So people don't usually break through your walls. They don't get closer to go, "You doing okay?" You know, they don't do that, because our society is turned off by overweight people. So it caused me to be more lonely. And it just, you know, there's all these components to it. And I don't want to go there again. I want to deal with those issues. I want to go, okay, what's this about? Okay, you're sensitive. Okay, is this serving you? Is there any point of using your energy this way? Okay, let's choose not to do this. And I want to approach it more logically, instead of being just heart-driven, where I put my heart so out there that it gets hurt, and then I try to protect it, and I protect it with something that actually ends up hurting me, like being overweight and the food. I mean, hurts my health, and it makes other people worry about me. I mean, I had no idea how much it affected my family, because it was me. You know, it was all about me. It's my life, my body. But I have a 14-year-old that if I go for a bite of cheesecake at the Cheesecake Factory just saying, "I just want to taste it," you'd think I was an alcoholic going for a drink. Mm-hmm. And some people go, "Oh, I mean, she just needs to get over it. That's not right. Who's the mother here?" It's like, no. This hurts her. It hurt her to see her mom like that before, and she's afraid. She doesn't want her mom to hurt like that again. She doesn't want me going back there.
So there's something that you just brought up, Susan, that I think is really important for this call and useful for our listeners, which is, you said, I want to be more logical about it. I don't just want to put my heart out there and keep getting hurt. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the misconceptions that keeps people cut off from the intelligence of the heart. Mm-hmm. In HeartMath terms, and by the way, we may have neglected to mention in this call that HeartMath is the body of research that we use here at FIERA to help people access, in this scientifically proven way, the positive feeling states that have these health benefits that we've been talking about. And so HeartMath began researching the physiology of stress about 20 years ago. And in assessing that, they found that the heart is a place where we can very efficiently and effectively circumvent the negative effects of stress, in some cases even reversing or at the very least slowing the aging process. And one aspect of that is a distinction between what we might call the higher heart and the lower heart. It's the lower heart that gives the heart a bad rap. The lower heart is the sentimental heart, the romantic heart, the nostalgic heart, the hypersensitive heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of that correlates to stress, where we, quote unquote, follow our heart, but really what we're following is our infatuation with a person or a substance, or with our own identity, if our identity is invested in looking good or being approved of or seeming like we're a good person. And that ends up getting us hurt. But the higher heart intelligence, there's actually a brain that's been discovered in the heart, a true intelligence there that can be accessed when we're in these feel-good states, that communicates with the brain and our mind and leads to that common sense type logic that you were speaking about, Susan, that you want to come from and have been drawing more of,
mm-hmm.
that allows us to make sober decisions in life that lead to more long-term fulfillment as opposed to just the immediate gratification of the romantic or sentimental heart. And we tend not to think of that sobriety as heart-based, but in fact, it's got more of what we would call the bottom-line business heart in it, because it's looking out for our well-being and our fulfillment long-term. And the power to access the will and intelligence and foresight to receive that level of fulfillment, researchers at HeartMath have found, comes from the heart, but the heart in an ordered state, as opposed to the disorder of what most of us associate with the infatuated heart. And so this is a great distinction that you've brought in, Susan, that part of the emotional weight that's bogging us down and leading some of us to starve ourselves and others of us to gorge ourselves, everyone missing a balance and feeling kind of chaotic and distraught and heavy on either side of the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
is that lower heart frequency, we might call it, or the emotional attachment and the blame you described and the disappointment that comes when that's what which we were infatuated in with doesn't solve all of our problems. Our knight in shining armor didn't make everything okay in our lives, and then we go to food and hope that it will do that, or, you know, and really that's the other gem that I heard you bring forth when you were speaking earlier, is that the higher heart, the sober heart, the heart intelligence, that it brings more order and more well-being to our lives, takes total self-responsibility for its own choices. It's essentially, and this is practical, this is not theoretical, our ability, our power to feel good lies in no one else's hands and really ultimately has nothing to do with how heavy or how light we are physically.
Mm-hmm.
Our ability to feel good comes from the heart of the moment and a choice that we make in a self-responsible way. And the only way that I could make that choice in my own life was to have tools to help me get there, both the step-by-step tools of the heart as well as the biofeedback technologies that HeartMath provides and that we offer with our courses. And so I heard you make a shift from blaming circumstances, blaming your husband, blaming doctors, to really owning your own choices for yourself and then receiving the support of the loved ones around you as support rather than seeing it as judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And that perception shift and that empowerment to choose for yourself really, in my experience, comes from making the shift to the heart's point of view. And then we can choose to do things like lose weight without that being an act of judgment towards how we are, but rather a simple choice of either our preference or self-care.
Mm-hmm. It's very true. I mean, it is so true because I realized I had become like a victim to the food. I had become a victim to the weight. I was angry when I would lose a few pounds and I would expect my husband to, I don't know, I guess cartwheels would have been nice, you know. and he'd say, Susan, you have 50 pounds to go. You've lost 5. Keep with it, okay? And he's just that, you know, doesn't sound like he's very nice, but, I mean, he was feeling like my expectations were too high on him, like he was supposed to do these cartwheels, and I had just started this process. And so I blamed him, and so then when I would say, okay, well, forget it. Well, if you would just be more supportive and loving, I also thought that if I took care of myself, that it was selfish. I was being really selfish. I could give myself away. I could stay up night baking cupcakes for my kids' school. I could do all these things, travel to Africa and help take care of, you know, rock a baby with AIDS. And I could do all that kind of stuff. But take care of me? I mean, no, I don't think so. Because if somebody really loved me, then they would be taking care of me. They would do this. And so I set up this scenario that I look now, and it's hard. It's very hard to look at it. And I chose to not really stay in that place because that wasn't going to do me any good, feel like, oh, poor me, not look back. Instead, I started taking care of it myself and not, like I said, looking for the approval for others. I shared that I was on this program, and if I was tempted, it was okay if people would, you know, say something. And I found people were really very loving and supportive. I'd say, oh, that cookie looks good. Nope, you've worked too hard. You don't want it. I didn't take offense. I just said, thank you. That was just enough. And I would, you know, I would appreciate that support. I say that I was like Dorothy. I had the red slippers on. All I had to do was click my heels. I could have done it all myself instead of waiting for my husband or waiting for something else to happen. All this time, I had them on. I could do this. And when I'd eat the salads with the balsamic vinegar, and some people were like, aren't you just so tired of eating, you know, ahi tuna and broccoli and salad? I'd say, no, I just appreciate it. I appreciate it so much. I appreciate what my body is doing. I appreciate my skin is responding. I appreciate that. And I just kept deciding, and a lot of that I learned from HeartMath was appreciation and that it was healthy for me. And nobody had to really hear a lot of the internal chatter in my head saying, you know what, I'm doing it. I'm doing this. I am doing this for me. I'm appreciating the process. It's easy. People look at me now and go, oh my gosh, you know, that was so fast. Yeah, it was fast. I lost it faster than I put it on. But it was a lot of work, and my work's not done. My work is so not done. I need a lot more skill to continue on this journey because I'm in a much better place where I am today, but I still can be easily tempted to go down the yellow brick road.
And so when you get tempted now, Susan, what do you do? Because something that you shared really just now I feel is incredibly significant, which is another aspect of the lower heart in our culture is the do-gooder heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The heart that puts everyone else first.
Yep.
and doesn't take care of itself. And that's not the real heart. The heart intelligence, if you think about it, the heart is brilliant in its design. When it contracts, it feeds the body, and when it expands, it feeds itself. Mm-hmm. It pumps blood to the rest of the body, and then it opens its coronary arteries and receives that blood. And so the only way, of course, you know, put the oxygen mask on yourself first, that we can really be of benefit to our society, our culture, our family, our friends, is if we are taking care of ourselves. And yet, I think for women especially, there's this conditioning to care for everyone else and put yourself last. And that somehow that makes you heart full.
I think it's a huge issue. I mean, I think that's why I really admire that, not because I'm on your program, that you're talking about this issue straightforward, is because it isn't talked about straightforwardly. I mean, you can go to any weight loss program, you can buy any book, but a lot of it isn't talking about the emotion, females. That's why more women die of heart disease, you know, than men. More women die of heart disease than cancer because they're fixing dinner before they go to the ER. You know, I'm hurting, but, you know, I'll do this later. And so here we caretake everybody. We put ourselves at the end and, you know, and then you go through this other whole, these loop-de-loops. And it's tough. I mean, it's tough. And I see these kids and coping and life stress, and so, you know, your foods is right there. It's easy.
So what I hear is that HeartMath helped you address this core root by being able to transfer that adaptive behavior of caretaking the world mm-hmm. into taking true care of yourself.
And I still am not totally there yet. I mean, I still have to...
Well, then what are you doing on the call?
That's it. Goodbye.
You're not perfect? And that's another one, isn't it?
There it
I know
is.
That's
yeah.
where HeartMath helps me the most is with my perfectionism.
Yeah.
And this might be actually a lovely moment. Are you still there, Rhonda?
Yes, I'm here.
I'd love to take this moment to introduce you, Rhonda, who can bring us another side of this same coin. Is it okay if I kind of tell a little bit of your story, Rhonda, to introduce you?
Yeah, sure.
So, and this will be interesting, I think, for you, Susan, as well. Rhonda came to me as a model who was experiencing the stress of having to always be so thin mm-hmm. and even being sent away from jobs if the clothes didn't fit right. Right? I think you were stressing because of, like, being a size 5 or something and they needed a 4, you know, and I'm sure for you, Susan, that's just like, oh my God, it's like the difference between, like, I don't know, a 0.5 millimeter pen and a 0.45 millimeter pen. It's like, please.
I can't wait to hear Rhonda because I'm now a 6 from like an 18, 16W 18, and I'm going, I wonder if I can get to a 4.
And
so I need to hear Rhonda.
And this is really the point, right, is that I think even for me, meeting Rhonda was really such a gift because for those of us that don't look like models, whether mm-hmm. it's because of our weight or because of just the, you know, our features or our height, you know, that there's always this kind of underlying assumption in our culture that, oh, if only I looked like a model, mm-hmm. then I'd be happy and fulfilled. So is that true, Rhonda? Enlighten us.
No. That's about the furthest thing from the truth.
All right. Well, then tell us your truth anyway.
Truth. Well, I mean, I've struggled since I started modeling. It's been a battle of, like, you know, between anywhere from, like, you know, 5 to 30 pounds, but it it can be very consuming, and it just takes you so far away from the heart. And that's what I'm so beginning to realize, because I've been on this, you know, up and down journey for over 10 years now. And there is always that conquest. For me, it was like, you know, if I was a 6, I wanted to be a 4. If I was a 4, maybe I could be a 2. And it was just like constantly clawing away at something and never really feeling fulfilled, like, with myself. And I, you know, have struggled with, like, overeating at times and then going on more, like, restrictive diets and exercising like crazy. And I'm kind of at a place in my life now of trying to find more balance. And when things would get too much for me or overwhelming, I would, you know, inevitably put a little bit of weight on just, you know, to protect myself a little, so I wouldn't have to be put out there so much or have to go through that with work. But, you know, I definitely realize it's not about the food. That's just, like, what I turn to and what's, you know, I love food too. And it's like a way of coping. But I realize getting, you know, coming back to the heart, like finding out what the truth is and reminding myself of that makes all the difference. And I think I'm, you know, watching and witnessing, if you're really in the heart, then you're wanting to respect your body and you're wanting to choose relatively healthy things and you're not wanting to overeat. So in a way, it's like your body and your appetite kind of takes care of itself.
Mm.
And you don't have to be such a, you know, like the food police.
So eloquently said. Thank you. I love that.
But of course, like, you know, that takes work and practice to get there. That just doesn't happen overnight. And I think for me is, you know, I've definitely got to the, you know, cliche, the right weight many times, but it was just, you know, being focused on my body and this exercise program and this way of eating. But, you know, I wasn't giving myself room to enjoy and live. And then, you know, once I got there, I would feel kind of like, you know, energetically like spent and like, you know, how can I, you know, live and, you know, be me and express myself under these like rigid, you know, like conditions. So I think, you know, you have to follow programs when you need to, you know, lose weight or find a way of doing that. But sometimes almost the real work is like once you get there, you know, to where your goal is, then to really, you know, to stay there is, you know, about going to your heart and practicing that regularly.
I think both of you really expressed that it's less about making these big changes in your body and more about learning how to tune to your heart to live in a balanced way all the time.
Yes.
And so what's helped you? You've mentioned practice a lot, Rhonda. What's helped you sustain, you know, how has it been hard? Did you notice changes right away? Was there enough success to, what inspired you to practice that much? Because I think some people would hear like, oh, I have to practice. It's like more discipline, more. So, but what allowed you to do that?
What allowed me? Well, it was just, you know, it was like little by little. And if it was, you know, I could like witness myself like making different choices. And I noticed if I would, you know, take those like few minutes in the morning or, you know, like to be a little bit like proactive and, you know, just kind of like go back to the heart. And do use some of the heart math tools, then it would kind of take care of things before anything would like escalate to where I would want to use food or overeat. And being the days where I would take that time for me and feel more connected, you know, would play out differently than the days where I wouldn't and would feel more compelled to want to eat more.
That's great. That's so clear. How about you, Susan? Have you observed something similar?
Yes. I mean, once I decided to really own it and realize that this is about me, this isn't about somebody else taking care of it for me, you know, and stop expecting that. It's mine. It's my duty to take care of myself. And so now I find when I'm in a stressful situation, I mean, I will gravitate towards the food, or I'll think, you know, I really want something, and I'll stop myself and think a heart math and think, wait a second, do I really? I mean, what am I? And I've put things where if I just need to do something that I'll, you know, something that it's healthy, I now will put food in the refrigerator at work that's okay for me, you know, and I drink more water, and I just am more conscious about it, and I make the choice because I want to. I'm doing it because I want to do it. It's not because I have to. And if I choose to have a cookie, then I tell myself I'm doing it because I want to do it. I mean, that's it. I'm going to do it because I choose to do it. And, you know, that I don't.
I hear both of you sharing something really similar, and you both said one of the things the same. You said that this issue of consuming food was consuming you. Here you are at two totally different ends of the spectrum. Someone who is humiliated by the fact that their doctor is putting their name down as, or in their medical chart as obese, right?
Yep.
Can just feel the like, oh, wait, that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
That's not who I am. And then the opposite end of the spectrum, here's this beautiful young woman who is literally surviving financially by being this two-dimensional object in an image as thin as she could possibly get herself. Would you say that's accurate, Rhonda? I mean, you both got pigeonholed into these objectified things as your bodies instead of your essence.
Yep.
And in being identified as your body instead of your heart, your essence, then that which fed your body consumed you. And what I hear is that both of you found the heart of who you are, and then food could nourish that instead of food owning that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like it resonates with your experience at all?
Definitely. I mean, it's obviously still important to, like, honor yourself and enjoy food and not feel guilty about, you know, having, you know, good-tasting things and treats and whatnot. But whether you're having it for emotional reasons or a genuine, you know, enjoyment of food is two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and getting back into honoring that is, you know, where the difference lies.
And would you say that using the heart math tools has helped you, Rhonda, to kind of discern what you're using food for in any given moment?
Yes, for sure. You know, to stop and think about why, you know, why you're eating, or even while you're eating. If you want to, you know, to eat more or eat past full, you know, that is also helpful just to, you know, connect back to, or in social situations where there's more distractions and whatnot, or in, you know, comparing yourself to what everybody else is doing, because we're all different. We all need different things. We all have different body types, you know. Some people can eat like crazy. Some people can't. You know what I mean? We all process things differently, and, you know, getting back to, like, what feels good to you and, you know, what makes you unique. And I think when you're, like, you take your power back when you're, like, honoring yourself and your body. And it feels good to make good choices for yourself and to eat good things, not just because you want to lose weight.
Right. Yeah, that's great. And the heart, of course, is a portal through which we can feel what feels good to us. Because I think a lot of people are disconnected even from what does feel good. And so coming back to the heart and learning how to access feeling good gives you a reference point where you can recognize what will help support you to feel even better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Susan, I'm wondering if you have, you know, coming from your side of the equation, I'm wondering if you have any questions for Rhonda.
Well, it will be interesting for me, Rhonda, because I have a daughter who's 14 who dreams of being a model.
Mm-hmm.
And she's built, you know, this, she's thin. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's interesting, and I just wonder as time goes on what, from being overweight, what that has done to her. I have another friend, she's a nurse and he's a doctor, and their daughter is anorexic, and the reason, I mean, they went to some the classes up at Stanford, and one of the young women said, oh, my mom was overweight, worried about her weight so much, and I decided I wasn't going to be overweight. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, you know, did I do this to my daughter? Is she going to be this way? Here she wants to go in a profession where you almost can't be too thin. And then she's got her mom that had this, you know, issue, which was my coping skill. And now then this physician that I went to see just for my own health, you know, and she's like, I didn't recognize you. You totally changed. I'm hoping that you're not going to go overboard and now go the other way. You need to stop. And I'm like, no, not quite. And she's like, you totally changed who you look like. You don't even look the same, and which is true. People walk by me, and
mm-hmm.
they don't know who I am now.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe it because I'm still the same person on the inside looking through the same eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm looking out the window looking – you just walked by me. I'm like, hello? And they're like, do I know you? I can't believe the things people say to thin people either. And my daughter had told me that, Mom, people wouldn't walk up to you when you're overweight and go, you know, you're too fat. But when you're thin, they'll go, you're too thin.
Yeah.
And people have now said to me, I'm too thin. If I get any thinner, I'll look like I have AIDS. I mean, I can't imagine seeing that to somebody's face.
No.
And people, have you experienced that also, Rhonda?
People feel that they have the right. Because, I mean, I've been all sorts of different weights, too. I mean, I've been, like, almost from anywhere from, like, you know, 125 to 170. I've gone up and down. And I see how people, you know, reacted to me and, you know, as well. And, you know, people that didn't know that I was the same person either when I, you know, that met me when I was heavier and then was smaller. And it's definitely a weird feeling because inside you're like, well, I'm the same person. But mm-hmm. I suspect that you've done a lot of work on yourself. So there's a lot about that you that has changed as well on the inside, you know, for a good thing. I think that for young girls, I kind of realize now, after taking a step back, because I started modeling when I was 13, I kind of stopped celebrating the other things that were good about me and the strengths that I had and started focusing on how I looked a lot. And that definitely took a toll on me. And I don't think that, you know, the people around me or my family kind of realize that. And there's nothing that I could not have waited to do until I was, you know, 18 or, you know, 19 years old in the field of modeling. I kind of, you know, I don't regret anything, but, like, looking back, it would have been nice to maybe just wait until I was, like, you know, emotionally ready and just more, you know, knew a little bit more of, like, who I was before my identity was, like, based on how I looked. So I think, like, you know, possibly when it comes to your daughter is, you know, definitely finding, you know, the things that she is good at and excels at, is interested in, and developing those things, you know, before it's, like, too much about how she looks.
And that's true for all of us, isn't it? Regardless of whether we're models or weight is an issue or not, it's like...
Definitely. I think, like, you know, all young people, and especially girls, you know, finding, like, what your strengths are and celebrating that and you know, what your interests are and developing them before, you know, you can get too worried and obsessed just about, you know, how you look and thinking that, you know, that's...
It's really these cases of misidentity.
Well, and it's so fascinating because, you know, we just don't openly talk about these kind of things. I'm involved in a group called National Charity League, which is mother-daughter, and they brought in this gal and who was a psychologist, and she started talking about body image. And this mom, and she talked about what is happening in America and that they've had you know, young women come from Egypt here, and here was this place, and they from where this town where they came from, and they didn't have any anorexic or obese issues. And next thing you know, they go back and they're having anorexic issues because they lived in America for a semester. And she started telling these case studies about these different things about the way we are here. I mean, you know, you just can't be too pretty. You just can't be too thin. You can't be too rich. You can't be too perfect. And she was talking to girls from, like, seventh grade through high school. And this one mom stood up and she said, you know, it's funny. I was a size 5 when I was in high school and or college or whatever. And she's like, you know, I just wasn't real happy with myself. And then I had my kids and I was size 10 and now I'm a size 14. And I look back, I'd love to be that size 5 again. And she used an example about and that this gal was never happy where she was. And she said the psychologist who was teaching the course pointed out that being in the moment, appreciating who you are in the body you are in, and appreciating that in that image, and I see
that is the juice right there, because that's the heart, isn't it?
It is, and we don't go there. We don't spend our time there.
But we do go there through Sierra, don't we?
Yes, and that's the thing I love about you. I love about the heart math. I love about the program, because it's been the one thing I've noticed now working in healthcare for almost 18 years. You know, I love this, and I wish, you know, I wish and I hope for our generation, especially for our young women, that they can get this message.
Well, we will definitely get this call out to as many as we can. I thank both of you, Rhonda and Susan, so much for sharing this message so generously with our listeners. Really, it takes a lot of courage, I think, to share your own experience so vulnerably when it isn't talked about much. And this power of appreciation and appreciating who we are, where we are, what we are right now. What is right now? Meaning, what is right about us now? Not what do we need to fix based on a consumer culture that's consuming us with its messages that we're not enough unless we buy something or change something and pay to do it. What's just right about us right now? Let's take a moment at the close of this call to together focus our attention on the area around our hearts and just find something to appreciate about yourself. And breathe that appreciation in through the heart and out through the heart. And we like to also, at the end of these Heart Start calls, pay it forward. And so connect with someone or something in your life that you think would benefit from this message, as Susan described it. And just quietly right now in your own heart, it's not like you have to run off and tell them, oh, you have to go listen to this Heart Start call. Not at all. Just your care is enough to get there. Share your appreciation of this person with them, that they might more appreciate their essence, who they really are, their heart, their own heart, and not get caught in the trap of misidentifying themselves as their appearance or their body weight or their job description or any number of things where we lose the heart of the matter. Susan, any last thing you want to tell our listeners before we sign off for the night?
Live and breathe heart math. Rhonda, it was so nice to meet you over the line and hear your story.
What you had to say is definitely helpful, and I identify with too.
Rhonda, anything else you want to say to our listeners to close the call for tonight?
I definitely agree. Practicing the heart math tools, and it's one day at a time, you know. And that's where you'll see, you know, the differences.
You guys are eloquent heart math teachers. I feel so privileged to get to share the line with two people who've definitely been through the wars and are able to express both heart math benefits as well as its strategy with such pristine clarity. Why don't you two hold tight for one moment? I'm going to stop the recording function on the call. I want to just share one more thing with you. And for our listeners who are listening to this as a recording, thank you so much for joining us tonight. If you'd like more information on Fiera's Heart Math trainings, which we teach both in person as well as in virtual coaching and webinars, you can call us at 310-581-1507, and you can also write to us, or to me personally actually, Sheva, S like Sam, H, E like elephant, V like victory, A, at Fiera, F like fantastic, YERA.com. And we always love to receive your stories, your questions, your input, and of course, your participation in any of the things we do. And if you'd like to receive reminders for these free Heart Start calls to your week, or even to download our archive of free recorded calls, you can go to www.fiera.com. In the lower right-hand corner of the homepage, you can sign up for our email reminders. And you can go to www.fiera.com/heartstart.html to listen to other recorded calls. So thank you all for joining us. I look forward to reconnecting with those who come to these calls next week. And Susan and Rhonda, hang tight for just one sec.
Okay.